Hey friends, welcome back to Artists of the Way. I'm John.
And I'm Nate.
And we are the hosts of this podcast. Today, our guest is Josh Reisner, Josh Adam Reisner. Josh is the artist in residence at the Michigan State Capitol.
Whoa, that's our state.
That is our state. Yes, he, so his work is in the state capitol, which is pretty cool. But he does a lot of work with oils. He has a degree in art history. So
olive oil. Coconut oil.
Yeah. He mixes colors out of them. It's amazing.
But it's very good, though.
Yes.
It's very good.
His art is beautiful. We'll have a link down below. You should definitely check it out. But this was just a really wonderful conversation.
Yeah.
We just talk a lot about sort of the raw realities of what does it look like to be an artist and pursue beauty and pursue something of excellence
while struggling with like letting that consume you.
Yes.
And just the pride that comes with that.
Yes.
It's a hard thing to figure out.
Yeah. And how do you navigate that? How do you stay rooted in God? I said to Nate after the conversation finished, this is almost like a quintessential episode getting down to the themes of
artists
and
of the way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. So this is a really, really great conversation. Check out Josh and his art. Also check out below. We'll talk a little bit about this at the end, but our audio does swap because of a glitch. So it gets a little tinny at the end. So just in case you miss any of it, check out his studio. I believe it's Rabbit Hill Studio. We'll have a link in the description. It's in Canonsburg. It's about a half an hour north of Grand Rapids.
And he wants you to visit.
He does. He hosts spiritual retreats there. It's available for people to come by, learn about art, or just create their own art. He was like, I want, you know, musicians to come compose.
Yeah,
I want to come write. I know, me too. I'm like, I'm going to check this out.
Are you going to come with us?
You could. Or you could go by yourself because scheduling is difficult.
Yeah.
Anyways, without further ado, here is Josh Adam Reisner. Thank you for coming on. We've been talking about this for many, many months, and then I had my child got delayed. So I'm glad that we finally made it happen here. First, can you just share for the audience a little bit about yourself for anybody who does not know you? Just a little bit about who you are, how you got into art, and maybe a little bit of sort of your life and Christian life alongside that.
That's a lot.
I know.
All right, then we'll be done.
I want you guys to be able to talk too.
I will interject with
there you go.
Comments.
Well, I'm married. My wife's name's Jill.
Nice.
I have one son, Linus.
Really?
Yes.
Linus is on my wife's list of names, possibilities.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I had a lot of, as an artist, I felt like there was a lot of choices. And
mm-hmm.
I had full naming rights, which is a really interesting thing. It's like a story. Like,
really?
My wife and I made a deal where like I got to be in complete charge of the name.
She got to carry the baby. You got to name
That's
it.
That's right.
Even
right,
Steven.
Right. It was great. Yeah. But his full name is Linus Cerulean Gray Reisner.
Wow.
So
I
want to
know
name.
About all those.
Well, Cerulean. I kind of feel bad about this now, but cerulean is a color. It's a pigment.
Oh.
And then gray is...
It's another color.
Yeah. Well, I sort of imagined that cerulean gray was like a hopeful melancholy, which is what I identified with a lot for most of my life as an artist.
Wow.
Was like right in that, you know, I wasn't in despair, but I had some hope, but I
yeah,
was mostly melancholic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I had the bright idea that I should name my kid that,
mm.
which now I look back and I'm like, I don't know if that was, you know, at the time before I had a kid, I guess I thought the best way to see the world was hopeful melancholy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seemed like I was always in a position of like, how do I hold the tension between idealism and skepticism?
Sure,
as an artist, specifically.
Sure.
You know, like, I didn't want to go into nostalgia. I didn't want to go into, like, depravity, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I was always sort of but trying to recognize both as,
yeah.
like, existing.
Yeah.
So I saw that as, like, the best way to see the world. And, like, honestly, mm-hmm. When I named Linus, I felt like I thought that would be the best way for him to interact with the world,
mm-hmm.
you know. But you know, as you know, once you have a kid, they get to decide what right. the best way to interact with the world. So
does
is.
He align with his name prophetically, or
I don't
not?
Think he does. Okay. Actually, I mean, I think Linus fits him really sure. well. Like, but good choice, you know, he first. Doesn't really identify, I don't think, too much with his middle name, mm-hmm. which is interesting.
Okay,
but
sure.
He might.
Yeah, I don't with mine either. It's yeah. okay. Earl. Mm-hmm.
It's Earl?
Yeah. Yeah. Who names
a
kid
cool
Earl?
That's a pretty cool name.
Oh, thank I think you. It's distinguished.
Yeah, yeah.
I think of like an old farmer kind of Earl.
Right.
But I think like of the distinguished like
Earl,
word,
of, Earl of something right. or other.
That is good.
Yeah.
It does have like a flow to it. I yeah. think. In names, I'm always like just trying to make sure there's like a flow.
Yes, I think that's important. Mm-hmm. I couldn't say my R's as a kid, so it was a curse.
Yeah. I don't, what does that sound like? I'm going to have a hard time too. I dislike my last name, Reisner, because it's kind of nasally. Mm. And I already kind of speak nasally, mm-hmm. which people in the podcast may realize that. I don't know. But yeah, Reisner always sounds like it has like a little bit of a nasally sound, mm-hmm. which would bother me because it doesn't, it's mm. not like beautiful.
Like there's but like there's that like short. Elevated like rise.
Yeah.
I only had yeah. read your name before. I didn't know how it was pronounced. So I thought it was Reisner.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask you if I could call you the Riz.
The Riz. Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that before.
Okay. I thought you probably had.
Yeah. No, I don't care what you call me. My wife is, Jill's the only one that cares like what, how people pronounce my last name or what.
Okay.
I don't care. I do go by, I always say like, I'm normally just Josh, but like, mm-hmm. when I'm fancy, it's Joshua Adam.
Oh,
but that's
sure.
been a way to distinguish myself as my name.
Sure.
So like everything I do as an artist, I kind of try to go by Joshua Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And my web presence and everything is yeah. related to that. It
yeah.
kind of sets me apart from the other Joshes out mm-hmm. there in certain, like, especially there's other Josh Reisners. There's mm-hmm.
Oh, is there?
Things.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, nobody... That's getting in the way too much. But there, most of the time they're doing bad things.
Oh. Oh,
no. Most just of the Joshes out there do bad things. Oh, and no. I just try to disassociate. So
that's yeah. a good idea, I guess.
So what was it that first got you into art? What was has that just always been a thing, or is there a moment you can point to where you were like, that was where I got pulled in?
I don't think there was a moment. I think I was thinking about this on the way over here. So most people don't realize this or would ever imagine this, but I was actually an athlete throughout mm. high school.
Mm-hmm. I think some artists once were really good athletes, really mm-hmm. good.
Yeah.
Thank you. It also was that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like I think I was hyper competitive. Mm-hmm. Like I love the practice. I love the, like I played basketball. I love basketball.
I should scooch over here.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a beautiful sport. He's going to talk basketball again.
Beautiful sport.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I love that. But I did always associate, I don't know if you're joking or not.
No, he's not. Nate plays basketball and loves it. And he got to talk about basketball once on the podcast and was like, my gosh,
really?
I just got to talk about basketball on the podcast. This will never happen
again.
What
do you like about it?
Oh, well. I feel like it has all the best parts of sport. You have the discipline to it, but then there's also the artistry, which you can tell by watching players who just like bulldoze their way through or who have more elegance to them. You can play it by yourself or you can play it with a team, and it just really meshes those things really well. It's physical but also really mental too.
Yeah.
Like I played last night and I wasn't in my best mental space and it just made me feel awful. But it's like, it's good to be in that conflict though. And so it pushes you and yeah, it's thrilling.
I think it, you know, I was just thinking like, there's part of me that feels like a sport like that can be spiritual.
Mm.
Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if this is the great, I don't know how clear this is all going to be, but I do feel like when you step on a court, oftentimes you kind of know who the best player is.
Yeah.
You know, if you are the best player,
yeah.
It's like everybody falls into a particular role.
Yeah.
And it's like a beautiful thing. It's like you can mm-hmm. see into the souls of people and like there's an yeah. honesty about where everybody's at. And there's sometimes this yeah. conflict. Oftentimes when the flow is broken down, it's because people aren't identifying that. They're not mm-hmm. listening to like their role,
yeah.
or where they belong.
Yeah.
Or like,
yeah,
it's a really, and I love that. I love that clarity.
And so, that can work either way, I feel. like you can think you're better than you are and be doing too much hot shot 100. Stuff and missing so much. But then I think you can also, like, I sometimes get in like a unconfident space where I know I can do better, but I kind of put myself lower than maybe I should be doing more kind 100%. Of thing. And that, I think,
and sometimes that's other people too. Like sometimes you need somebody like to see somebody that, like in my, if when I was playing, I would have loved to have, like, played with you and seen that lack of security and try to like bring that out. Like, you know, like, cause like that would be part so of helpful. That like sort of like experience, but like, hey, you're struggling. You can do this. Like, and then feed you a certain way or, you know, all that. Yeah. So I just love the purity of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does really feel like a microcosm of life and like spiritual life specifically.
Like you're all a part of the body, and as long as everybody kind of recognizes what their roles are, you know, we all get along and there's like a flow. You know? But as soon as an arm wants to be, you know, a foot wants to be an arm, or an arm wants to be a foot or whatever, things kind of get off, you know, like, so, but I think in regular life is a lot more confusing than like stepping onto the court, you know? So I think that's beautiful. But back to like art part, I always identified as somebody who could make anything, like at a very young age. I never had any insecurity at all when it came to like, can you make this? Can you draw this? Can you? Mm. I just didn't have that, you know. And I see that I've taught people, or been in a setting where I teach, and I see a lot of people who. The one thing that sets them back is that they don't have that sense of confidence, you know? And I often think, like, it doesn't feel like a talent to me. It doesn't feel like, I mean, the talent is probably whether you're secure or confident enough to do something. It's not like the talent is in your hand, you know? But, I mean, I don't know how true that is. I just feel like a lot of it is in the way you perceive who you are, what you what your role you think you're playing, you know?
Yeah.
And in my mind, I just always identified as somebody who was like different and made things and could make anything.
Yeah.
I've built houses and you know, buildings all in. I build frames now. I make things. I do plumbing, electrical work.
Wow.
I, you know, conserve, you know, 200-year-old paintings. I make paintings, you know, like anything that I can make with my hands. I've always probably done that. So I don't know if there was a clear moment.
Just who you are.
But I didn't like, I was not a kid who like sat around and sketched. Wish I love those type of kids. I would have loved to have been that guy that had like a journal and just doodled and sketched. I just was like a very active person. And like, I just didn't, I know I would have never been able to just sit and like doodle, you know.
Do you feel at all that you need like a purpose to create? Like, I'm not just gonna sit here and do it for myself. I need, somebody needs something, and so I'm gonna do it.
Well, I think I've always, I do make best when I'm making it for myself. But it's
interesting.
But it brings up an area of tension in my life as an artist, which is like, I'm always trying to enjoy the process and not the product, but the product is ultimately what I enjoy the most. So I love, I've always, well, once I discovered painting and the world of painting, which wasn't until I was 30.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was much later in my life. I mean, I had done a little bit, but not hardly any painting. Art, you know, I know art history background. I had no idea what my idea of art growing up was Walt Disney. So I can't remember what I was saying. I got distracted there.
Oh, about the process of enjoying the process of the end product.
Yeah, so like, I do love the idea of making a product that is like a treasure. Because like, when you make something that is like, and I don't know how true this is anymore, but some of my paintings are like of a level that are like kind of hard. It's hard for me to even this sounds weird saying in person, but often there are some of my paintings that I'm like, I don't know how I did that. They're good enough that other, you know, that they would stand on their own 2 feet in any setting. Maybe not, but close, you know.
I saw some of your work. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yes.
I think that's what I pursue, and I've always kind of wondered if you know, do I even love doing this? Or do I just love the pursuit of this, like, treasure? You know, like, and those are two different things, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't even know that the pursuit of the treasure or, like, the, the treasure.
Yeah.
The hunt for the treasure, that sounds better. I don't know if that's bad, but I do think it sort of breeds discontent a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I definitely feel that way. I do some writing as well, and I feel that way about writing in particular. Theater and acting, I love the process of that. Like, I can be in a rehearsal room all day, and I don't think I would get tired. But if I sat at a computer and wrote all day, I do think I would just kind of, I don't know that I would wilt away. But that idea of, like, there is something out there, though, that I think is, it's like, I think of, like, carving, like Michelangelo carving David out of that block of marble,
right,
where it's like, I can see that, and I'm not necessarily, I'm maybe not enjoying just carving these chunks of marble away, but I feel like I've got to get at that really special thing that's in there.
You have your eyes set on a goal.
Yeah.
You're hopeful that, you know, that the Pieta is what's going to come.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
So
I don't know. I don't know if that's bad, but I'm constantly, like, I'm currently in a place where I'm trying to figure out what is the healthiest way to live, as long as that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I have an answer.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's both, probably, you know. I think it's good to enjoy the process, and if you go too far, you can get out of balance and you just want the end. And like, it probably is a mix. I know it sounds cliche, but it's probably what it all is.
I just feel like the past couple of years, that's just what I've been learning, that everything is just like, it's neither over here, over here. Know. It's the difficult in the middle thing.
Yeah,
it's probably true there as well.
Yeah, there was this, I mentioned this, the hopeful melancholy thing. I got that idea from this British philosopher. I'm probably going to mess this up, but his name's Roger Scruton.
Yeah.
And he said,
I've heard that name.
I think I can bring this around and make sense of this. But he basically was saying why philosophers destroy themselves and the people around them, which I saw myself as an artist, as basically a philosopher, like an active philosopher.
Sure.
Is how I saw myself. But the reason, he said, is because of that tension, that a real philosopher will hold that tension that I had talked about, which I had said was hopeful melancholy, keeping the tension between idealism and skepticism. But what I always thought the best visual of that is, like, if you actually are keeping the tension, that's a tough place to stay in, because you're in a constant struggle.
Right.
Where, like,
stress.
People that go into, like, idealism
or
into, like, fully product, you know, just product oriented or fully process, you've kind of let go of the rope. Because you want to rest, right? It's tiring.
Yeah.
It's tiring to try to constantly, like, find that middle area, because you can never rest. You're like, every step you're taking is like, well, is that too far that way? Or is it too far that way? Or, like, you're constantly, where, like, if you end up over here in this realm, you're just, like, hanging out. And that's why you're, like, a little bit more at peace. That's how I see it. So I think it is hard to have balance, because it really requires, I think, a mental, like, what is it? Like, a consistency of mental thought. Like, you're just constantly having to be aware. You're on all the time, because, like, it's so easy to just slide off to one side of the hill or the other, right? Like, you're constantly measuring, where am I at? Am I in the middle?
Yeah.
So,
interesting.
What's been helpful for you, either as a person or as an artist, then, in finding or trying to stay in that balancing point?
Well, I think I was really bad at it. I think I hurt, I, you know, I don't know how much to get into this, but, like, you know, I had, like, a bit of a breakdown a couple years ago, and it was primarily because, like, I had no balance.
Yeah.
Like, I had no balance at all. Like, I was just constantly in pursuit of, I would say at the time it was legacy. So I wanted to, like, make a great painting, and I thought the greater that I could make it, and the more higher profile of a, you know, commission I could get, the better chance I was going to be able to leave a legacy. You know, I feel like that's removed from me now. I don't know what the new thing is. I feel like I'm currently in, like, I do kind of know, but I think I'm, you know, I was just so clearly defined by, like, legacy chasing. And then I feel like God just shut that door, which I had mentioned, Balaam's donkey, the story of
Balaam. Yes.
And I feel like, man, I heard that story. Jake Partridge mentioned that to me. He stayed at my studio and he mentioned this story. And man, since he told me the story about this donkey that was actually getting beat, but was trying to help, you know, the prophet, you know, trying to like stop him from getting killed. Man, I feel like I was beating donkeys for like most of my adult life. I was just like beating donkeys and beating donkeys. And, you know, like I wish that, and the donkey finally like got up and like kicked me in my back. And then I couldn't sleep or do what I couldn't paint. I still struggle to like stand and paint for long periods of time. Like, because of like, I don't know what it is. It's either, you know, I think some of it's mental, just from like years of like putting tons of stress on myself, trying to accomplish whatever it is. I think in the art world, this is a bit off topic, I guess, a little, but like, I think I pursued painting because like the goal was never ending. Like I did, like there was, like I was doing graphic design and coding and Flash and stuff. Like in my 20s, I was like really into like writing code. ActionScript was big, like Flash, all this stuff. I was really interested in that, and I transitioned away from that because I thought like I can never keep up with this. Like it's just gonna keep changing and just never goes, it never ends. Like every week I was having to learn something new or whatever because it was like at the cutting edge. And I remember thinking that painting has been around for a long time,
right,
and that this was something I can like learn and never ending. Like, what, I mean, it'd be the same path. It's not like I'm going to have to jump to a different code or whatever.
Right. You're doing oils, which has been, people have done oils for thousands of years.
Yes, I'm trying to make a masterpiece. Yeah. It's something lots of artists have been doing. It's something that seemed universal. It seemed like beyond, you know, technology, beyond like our time. But in the end, I'm wondering about how much that ambiguous like goal of making a masterpiece, making something beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, when do you ever get the stamp of approval with that? You know, like, you don't. I mean, that's a very stressful place to be because, it's, like,
it's fleeting, too.
Yeah. Like, every moment I would make a painting, and most people, so many ideas here, most people would be pretty happy with whatever I, you know, the people, my friends or family, whatever, would see it and be like, that looks pretty awesome, you know? And I would have like 5 minutes.
But
Then, I mean, I would love it that day. And I know you've heard it lots of artists. And then wake up the next morning and you're like, holy cow, how did I do that? It's so horrible.
You know?
But yeah, I feel like that, I don't know. I don't know. I sometimes wonder if maybe that's what makes a great artist is the tolerance of that misery. Like, how tolerant can you be? Of how long can you tolerate the misery of never being satisfied? You know, like, because I think at some point I sort of wore out a little bit. I don't, I think that's part of what happened. It's like I was just so intolerant. I was I was tolerant. I had high pain tolerance for a while of like just being inadequate in my own head. You know, like I was never going to be good enough for what I wanted to be. It didn't matter how many, like, it didn't matter how many, like, accomplishments. It did, you know, like, even my wife's always joking, like, I have a giant monumental portrait of the governor in the state capitol of Michigan, which is it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But to me, it was like, like, I could do way better. Like, I want to be, like, in the Met, or, you know, like, I want to be something else. And if I was to get in the Met, I think I would have been like, well, I want to be like, I want to, like,
I want to stay in the Met.
You know, like, whatever. Or I would like, you know, every time I made a larger amount of money with a commission, like, I would, I'd be, well, let's see if I can get 100, whatever. I can get, like, more of this, more of that. It just never ends. So, I don't know. I think, I don't know how artists deal with that. I don't know that every artist does that either, you know.
This Giving Tuesday, we're giving you a break from all the craziness of the last couple months of the year. Join us on December 2nd from 6:30 to 8:30 for a cozy Christmas kickoff with Artists of the Way. We're doing this at One Church in Caledonia, and it's going to be a wonderful event. There's going to be some delicious hot drinks. We're going to have some live jazz. We're going to have a bunch of resources for you to be able to enter into Advent with a spirit rooted in Christ and in the reason for the season. Some great meditative prayers that you'll be able to take home and integrate into your own preparation for the season. And what I'm most excited about, just providing a space for fellowship with each other as we enter into the celebration of the arrival of our Lord and Savior. It's going to be a beautiful night. It's going to be very homey, very cozy. So again, some wonderful music. I am just so excited, and I want to see all of you there. So don't miss it. Go to our website or to our social media to find out more information, and we will see you there. I think there's something, I mean, I resonate with it to a degree, I think, because every artist, it's project-based, and there's always further you can get with another project, right? Like, there's always a role as an actor where I'm like, there's always a role that could be better than the last one that I played. Or if I played Hamlet, that's pretty darn cool. Yeah. But I probably could do better at playing Hamlet. I'm like, I could get even more truthful, or I could actually cry, which I didn't when I did it. You know, like I feel like as an artist, there's always one step better that you can get. I think that's an interesting tension then as an artist and as a Christian, because of course, if you're raised in the church and you know, like the Sunday school answers, you know, well, I know that the next art piece is not going to fulfill me. Like intellectually,
right.
You know that the next project's not going to fulfill you. But I think it's just really easy for artists to slip into that and into being focused on what's that, which maybe it's just easy for people to get, you know, sucked into what's the next goal. Because I feel like that just sneaks up on me for sure, where it's like, I'm just sort of living life and trying to honor God. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh wait, no, I'm actually trying to do this thing because I want to be here for myself and my ego or my goals or desires or something. And I think that's an easy pitfall for artists, because we want to keep growing in our craft and we want to keep, you know, making more new things.
I don't think I've figured it out. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think it's, I would imagine that, well, I don't know. I mean, I think the pursuit of knowledge and the pursuit of beauty and trying to master something, mm-hmm. it seems admirable. Yeah. I mean, it's not lazy. Yeah. I was never lazy.
Yeah.
And I was self-aware to some degree. Like, I mean, you have to be in order to improve, right? You have to be like, oh, I sucked at that in order to be better at it the next time. So there are like good qualities about it. Mm-hmm. But I also don't, you know, but it also seems very pride oriented, mm-hmm. you know, like, there's a lot of ego involved. So I don't know what the balance is there, you know. Like lately mm-hmm. I've just been feeling like, man, just play the fool, you know. Like just be a fool, you know. Try to just do whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's the, you know, being at the Anglican Church mm-hmm. is kind of fits me in the mm-hmm. where I'm at with like even my art, because like, you know, with my education and just my general personality, I'm always trying to solve things. I'm always mm-hmm. trying to figure things out, trying to like know things, trying to be the best, like back to the basketball thing, mm-hmm. trying to, you know, be the, you know, everything was kind of competitive driven.
Yeah.
But in my current state, you know, at 49 years old, like, I don't think that served me very well. Mm-hmm. And I never really learned enough to make me happy. And I think being an Anglican now, like I said, I feel like the liturgy just washes over me a little. Mm-hmm. And I just play dumb. And I love it. Yeah. I just play dumb and I just like let the experience like do what it's going to do to me. And I feel like there's an analogy there with like what I should be doing with art a little bit, but I haven't quite figured that out, because I also have old habits.
Right.
Like I have these habits that have gotten me to where I am, you know, like they've been somewhat successful in terms of getting me what I thought I wanted or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? So
it's
funny how I feel like a little bit of my life is in like two different areas, you know, where like my faith is stronger and I feel like living my life outside of being an artist is fairly healthy and balanced. But every time I try to play artist, I feel like that kind of pulls me into a realm where I have to fight not to be like what I was, you know, prior to the time that I got hurt or whatever. So at that time too, like, I don't mean to make this podcast about that.
No,
I
know it's interesting. That's good. Yeah.
I was at the kind of the peak of my career. I also had my son and stuff. And then I was hurt, not sure how, but I couldn't sleep and I couldn't make work. I couldn't stand and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I had a conversion at that point. So this is feeding into all of what I was talking about, where I just had this epiphany that like I had been pursuing like goodness, truth and beauty, but I had none of the fruits of the spirit. Mm. And it sort of hit me, like overwhelmed me with like, I sort of realized that I don't know how that's possible. I honestly feel like I was pursuing good things.
Yeah.
I don't think I was like out there, you know, just trying to promote depravity and like, you know, like, but I also was not relational at all. Like I didn't care about people. Like they were just kind of things that would get in the way of my career. Mm. So that immediately shifted. I feel like that's when I became like a Jesus Christian.
Mm-hmm.
The best kind.
Yeah, no, I was like I was like an esoteric Christian before. I don't know what that means. Although I grew up a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I was a fairly strong-willed Christian. Like I don't control myself. Yeah. But as I got older and things happened, I feel like I used to label myself as a mystic, which I believed in God. I wasn't so sure about Jesus.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't so sure, but I wouldn't have been blasphemous, but I was willing to like say anything because I felt like God and I were good. Like I felt like, well, I believe in God, but anyway, after I got hurt, I experienced like suffering for an extended period of time. I became a Jesus Christian pretty quickly. Yeah. Like,
it's so strange how easy it is to forget that Christianity is really about Jesus.
Yeah. It is odd, but I also think like it's weird because I used to think I was so intelligent and so self-aware and so, you know, philosophical, but like I didn't know the simplest thing, which was like suffering. Like I remember thinking like after I was in hurt for a period of time and just felt completely broken, I remember looking at people and being like, that's suffering. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's like I had, in order to be relational, in order to understand Jesus and like loving others and loving God, you know, like I had to experience suffering and I was like a suffering moron. I was like, I had no experience of suffering. Like, to be honest, I just had been this guy who had been like, suck it up. I mean, I was the guy on the basketball team that was going to like get all the rebounds and just like muscle it. You know, I muscle my way through, run harder, push harder, climb the hill. Like, I just felt like I didn't understand that human life is not all just like winning.
Right.
You know, like,
although
I had had some experiences of suffering, but none just like I felt it at the core of my spirit, you know, and like that's when I felt like Jesus became very clear to me at that point, you know, and it changed everything. It changed my art. Well, it hasn't completely changed everything. It changed me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I still don't, it's fairly new. Like it was like 2 years ago. And I don't really know exactly what it's going to do yet. You know, I don't really know. I mean, I'm kind of at a point now where I'm like we had talked before, or like I spent like the last, not in the last year, but maybe the previous 6 years, you know, I was busy with like pretty high profile commissions, like constantly and like had several and all, like it was occupying me all the time. And I still had like the contract with the state. So, which I do consulting with them on all kinds of different things. But all of that has shifted a little bit because the commissions aren't as coming in quite the same. It doesn't seem like, I'm not entirely sure what the reason is for that, but like, I tend to think that might be a donkey Just a donkey that I'm like, I'm trying not to be. I'm trying to like, okay, what am I hearing here? I kind of feel like it could be that. I've had these ideas for probably like 5 years. I started painting I used icons to justify painting in the first place. That was like 20 years ago when I started painting. I found my way immediately to icons. I've always felt like kind of drawn to that. I want to do like sacred art that like benefits people in some way, you know, but I'm also a coward in some sense. I think, you know, like I don't want to be a destitute artist. I've never been that artist. I've never been that artist who's like, that has to buy like the cheapest paint and like, I just always had enough success, I guess, or whatever, was blessed enough that I just could do what I wanted to do. And so I am a little bit weak. I don't know what it's going to look like, you know, but I definitely feel like I want it to be something that's beneficial to people. You know, like I don't want it to be about me. Although probably most of the people that know me probably would be like, well, it's always going to be a little bit about you. Because I tend to have a bigger, like, I don't know. I can't get rid of the ego. It's part of being an artist, I think. I think, you know, so. I can't get rid of it.
There's something. What is it? Or it's attributed to Lewis, the classic humility is not thinking less of yourself, but just thinking of yourself less. And so like that idea of that ego can be anything that's just involving like putting us in the center of the thing and thinking about it. And I just think, especially in our modern landscape of art, it is very self-expressionistic. Like we're mining our own experiences. We are mining other people's experiences as well, but I think like the core is often our own experience. Not all the time. I think that there's times where, you know, God in his grace can work in us and really be the core of that. Or there, you know, there can be times where it's like, oh, well, I really want to honor this person and this experience. But you're still coming at it from your lens and your perspective, and it's still your sensibilities. So there is something just a little egocentric about art.
I get what you're saying, but I feel like there's definitely a pure version.
Yes, there is.
And that, like, because God created art and artists, and I feel like, just like with people in general, like the more we surrender ourselves to Christ and maybe stop thinking too much like in our heads about how we're doing. I think of Chesterton's line that you said, the angels can fly because they take themselves lightly. but how God works is that when we give ourselves to him, he gives us back our true selves then, and we can really be the person that he made us to be, which is a unique us person. But then hopefully we're at a place where we're not doing it out of ego and not scared of being ourselves too, because, oh, I don't want to be egocentric. No, just don't worry about it. Just be you. And I think even in art, there can be the draw towards like, well, I need to make this meaningful. And sometimes that is important. But I think like God made you in a unique person that he didn't make anybody else like, and he's going to have his messages that can only come out of you in your unique way. And may or may not always seem sacred or meaningful, but that it will be because he's speaking through you in a way that can only come out of you.
Yeah. I was just thinking, have you guys had like an experience where like an audience or even like, you know, graphic design, let's say, somebody likes something that you did that you know is bad. But, so like they have joy, but you don't even appreciate their joy because your pretension allows, like makes you think that they're obviously not endowed with enough ability to judge this in order to see.
Yes.
Which I think like, I don't know what to do with that a little bit, because I feel like that is a sure sign that you're It's yeah, I don't know. I was just thinking, like, that's hard.
Yeah.
And I do feel like our current situation kind of trains us to be pretentious too. Like,
yes,
for me with an MFA, mm-hmm, not, you know, whatever that means.
Master of Fine Arts.
Yeah, yeah. I've been thinking a lot lately, like, how that trained, it really trains you to alienate yourself.
Yeah.
It trains you to, like, treat, it's like, I keep thinking of the emperor's clothes. It's the same thing. It's like treating, it's teaching you how to try to convince people that.
Yeah.
If you want to be on my team, you got to agree with these terms, mm-hmm, which is like, you can't find joy in Thomas Kincaid, let's say, or whatever. like you can't find joy in a waterfall.
Yeah.
Like, because if you do, you're on the other side, and
right,
like, you obviously aren't intelligent enough to know what real beauty is, right? Mm-hmm. So like, but I do feel like that is what, and I never saw that being that way for me. Like, mm-hmm, I never thought it, because I was actually a traditional artist,
right,
in a postmodern academic setting, which I felt like I was constantly fighting for whatever was, I thought was, mm-hmm, good. Mm-hmm. But in the end, the thing that I shared with them is like pretension and like arrogance and elitism, you know? It's kind of an interesting thing how like that is a part of our training now or something, you know? It seems like, or maybe the what I thought of an artist too, you know? Mm-hmm. Like what I think of like a musician or an artist or like...
Yeah.
A writer is like, I elevate them so much that I kind of like the pretenses and like, yeah, these are more special people, you know, you know, I don't know. Like, because I do kind of see it that way, you know, like a philosopher or like
right.
a great artist, a great writer, a great actor, you know, like something godlike in it, you know, that is like, just like,
it is annoying. Because we believe as artists that there is beauty out there and that there's some that's better than others and stuff. And we see that, and we feel like we get that from God. But then God is also not above using anything pretty much to bless people.
Right.
Like the crappy art that we make or that other people's make. No, I'm going to bless people through that. But God, you know that this isn't the great thing here. It's like, I don't care. And but I still want you to do your best, even though I'm choosing to bless people through this lesser art.
Yeah,
that's, and it's probably true. Again that surrender thing. Like, okay, God, you do what you will with what I make, what other people make, and they can react how they want. May you bless them and help me to do my best for you.
I've been thinking, as long as you're like looking out, if you're most concerned with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll probably recognize the joy that's given them apart from however good you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't mean you don't try to achieve something great, I guess. But, you know, as soon as you start focusing specifically on what you think is great, as opposed to like the joy that you're giving somebody, then like maybe that's where it goes wrong. I've been thinking about that a lot lately, like with every experience, like what happens in a marriage if you just like are not concerned. Yeah. Primarily concerned with your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
What happens in your friendships if you make yourself first? What happens in like church even? You know, I keep thinking about like what happens in any situation when like you're not actually focusing on the other person more than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But art, it's like one of those realms where like it really is like, I keep saying like it's like an alcoholic going into a bar, you know? Like, art is like you're trying to be like selfless, but you're like really a selfish jerk who's like going into a bar and hoping to not, you know, you're going to go make a painting and put the spotlight on yourself and try not to be selfish, you know, or try to not be self-centered.
It's really hard.
Did you know that Artists of the Way is more than just a podcast?
What?
I know, crazy. We do live theater.
Yes.
We have a conference.
Yearly.
Cultivate conference. Just happened and it was really great.
Yep.
We It's a growing organization. We're so excited about what is happening for Artists of the Way. Yes. And we need your support to be able to do it. We want to cultivate great, challenging, and joyful, redemptive art. And we want to equip the artists here in Michigan who are doing those things and all of you listening to the podcast.
Yep.
All of that takes money, unfortunately. That's the world we live in. But if
Earth,
you...
Yeah.
Earth was like, you gotta have some money.
Yeah.
But if you want to support Artists of the Way in everything that we do, go to our website and donate, www.artistoftheway.com/support-us. It's support-us, because the way that websites
work. Just go to the homepage.
That also
be a normal person.
Go to and click on the Support Us button.
Yes.
Our end of year goal is $6,000. We are about a third of the way there. So your one-time gift can go to helping us reach that goal, give us a nice jump start, or you can become one of our monthly donors. We have a goal of having a total of a third of our yearly budget being covered by monthly donors. So your gift of any amount per month, it does a huge amount to help us be able to put on this podcast and do it at a level of quality, be able to increase the quality.
Yes, buy a third mic when we have a guest.
Indeed.
You'd like that.
Yes, you could donate. And Mark, this is specifically for a third mic.
That would touch our hearts.
Yes. We hope you guys are enjoying this episode. Thank you for your support, for listening. And we hope you guys enjoy the rest of the episode. I think that's one of the interesting... I love seeing all the ways the different like artistic disciplines bring like little pieces to this conversation. So on theater, I think that's an interesting sort of virtue in how you're trained in theater. If you're trained well, you have to be aware of the audience, at least to the point of you shouldn't talk when they laugh. Because an audience will laugh, and they will laugh probably when you don't expect it. And you've got to wait for them to be done before you say the next line, or they're going to stop laughing because they can't hear what you're saying.
Right, that's interesting.
You interrupted their joy.
Right, and it's weird because sometimes they laugh, and you're like, what the actual heck? Like, I played Hamlet, and every night when I killed Polonius, the audience laughed. The weirdest thing, they laughed every night. I don't know if it was shocking and sudden or if something about how we did it was comical. I don't know, but they laughed every night.
Did it make you angry?
Oh, yes. which is the, talking about like the balance thing, yeah, right? There's the pitfall on one end is just judging the audience. There was one night where me and the lady playing the queen, who was the other person in that scene, they laughed for so long that her and I just locked eyes and we were just subconsciously could tell we're so angry and we're about to just be like so much angrier in this scene than we've ever been before. And it's already a pretty rough scene.
That's awesome.
We did take it on each other. But you have to, there's this theater, artists and audience have a symbiotic relationship anyways, but theater puts you in a room together where you have to figure out, how do I play off of that? Every audience receives a show differently and has a different experience. And it's just, it's such a bizarre thing. Who's the actor? I think it's Christoph Waltz. There's an interview with Christoph Waltz, German actor. Done a lot of movies, if people don't know. He's great. He's talking about, as an actor, inevitably what will happen is... the night that you feel like you were the most in character and you did the best and just all the emotions of the character were spot on and you achieved everything that you wanted to, you'll go out to, you know, you'll leave, you'll see the audience and you'll think, oh, tonight is going to be like, we're just lavished with praise and nobody will say anything. They'll just shake your hand and say good job and nobody will say anything. And then the performance where you just feel like you mucked everything up and somehow you didn't hit the emotions or the arc of the character right, inevitably somebody is going to come up to you and that's going to be the show where they've been the most moved and the most impacted by your performance.
Yeah. How dare you?
I had that. When I was in Hunchback, there was a show where I was like, man, I really screwed up this character arc this time. It was not soft or loving enough. It was just, It was just awful. And one of my friends came up and was just like, that was just amazing and so moving. And I was like, this one, really? It was so cold.
Oh, well, you should have seen me the other time.
No, but
you would have been really impacted.
Yeah, there's something, I don't know, humbling about that as a theater artist that I think you can go a route of being really judgy towards the audience and, well, why are they reacting that way? And they just don't have taste. But I think if you, there's a certain grace that I think has to be learned, especially as an actor, because you're giving this to the audience. You have to learn to treat their, what's the word, preferences, I guess, or tastes, and what they find joy in almost is more important than your own. Like, and that's another interesting thing with theater, is so much can be subtextual in a story. Mm-hmm. Like with Hamlet, I have a whole arc that I have in my brain that I think is like, for like 9/10 of it, pretty accurate, I think, to some things that Shakespeare was doing. And I'm like, I think this is what I want to draw out. And maybe a quarter of the audience probably really understood that. Probably less than a quarter really understood what that arc was that was in my brain that I was trying to play. But hopefully God did something else through that. Mm-hmm. But it is very humbling to be like, I can't get these ideas across to you that I want to, because I have a script and you're going to interpret that script in your own way.
Yeah. I kind of remember there being a moment. So I think it's interesting in painting, like, mm-hmm. I don't have that audience experience.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, like, I feel like I never even needed an audience. Mm-hmm. Like, I never was looking for an audience.
Sure.
It was like I was the only audience. Sorry, I was just thinking. I just lost my train of thought.
You're again.
Good. I just go off in these. I don't remember what it was.
No, you're good.
You're most concerned about, is this fulfilling what I wanted to make here as I'm painting it?
I guess I was just saying that, like, I feel like we're kind of, like I said before, with like a painter, I was never really concerned with like what the audience was thinking. I'm not even sure that I ever thought there was going to be an audience. I was going to say that, like, I remember there being a specific moment in my life where, like, I like to put random numbers on things, mm-hmm. but I feel like when I got into like the up, like 10% mm-hmm. of like of quality, mm-hmm. like where like I was up in the higher ends of things.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I realized that, like, there was nobody around me that was willing to criticize me anymore. I don't know if that... So I didn't have an audience, for one, like, because I was kind of taught in this pretentious... I don't know if taught. I think I actually shouldn't say taught. I shouldn't give anybody else that credit. I was pretentious myself. And I didn't really care what the audience thought.
Yeah.
But I do remember thinking, like, there was a moment where, like, even the people that I would have been maybe concerned with, like mm-hmm. the people that were other artists or like a lot of them that were around me, like they didn't, like they weren't at the same level in terms mm-hmm. of technique or like skill level in certain things, you know, mm-hmm. or maybe even at least at the time, maybe at in like the way I thought as an artist was mm-hmm. maybe like too much, but I, mm-hmm. I remember feeling like that's probably when things started going downhill for me a little bit. I keep wondering about how, like, pursuing something like knowledge, like anything, mastering anything is an alienating experience. Mm-hmm. It's like you were saying, like, you know, I wouldn't understand, I wouldn't be able to read Hamlet and be like, oh yeah, like I'm gonna do this and like, you know, pick this stuff out. You know, I wouldn't have any idea. But it's interesting that you can, and that does not allow you to connect to as many people as if you just like played Mickey Mouse. You know, like mm-hmm. like Mickey Mouse is gonna let you like mm-hmm. connect to kids and adults and like way mm-hmm. more people. So I don't know. I think it's interesting that like pursuit of beauty or like greatness or like all of these arts often are alienating, especially mm-hmm. the further up you get. Like, I think you just, and I, you know, it makes more sense, and I'm not even close to these people. I'm just saying, like, you can see like how, you know, musicians, great actors, musicians. Mm-hmm. I mean, they ruin their lives. Like,
yeah.
But
yeah.
It's a lot of it is just because, like, I'm sure they just feel alone. Mm-hmm. Like, you get to be, like, really good at something, and then nobody else has anything to say because they don't even really understand it. Yeah. They only needed, like, 10% of what you're doing, you know? Like, they were happy. I remember.
Right.
Yeah, most people were, most of my friends and family, which are really the only ones that probably care anyway, were happy with me at like 30% of the skill I was trying to pursue, you know? Like,
I
still don't know what to do with that, you know? Maybe God's going to redeem all of that, but I do think sometimes that opens doors now, like if I'm not near as egotistical as I was, you know? Like, but I know what it's like to pursue something at a high level. I've had people say that to me, actually. Like, I had a friend say, like, he actually trusted me because he had seen that, like, I was willing to go as far as, like, it needed, like, as far as anybody he had ever met in terms of, like, pushing themselves to try to be good at something, you know?
Yeah.
And he admired that, and he sort of trusted me in other areas because of that, you know?
Sure.
So I wonder if that, maybe that's a benefit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've been the war, like, with yourself, and maybe that can help in the end, you know? But I don't know. I really do not want to alienate myself anymore. I think that's what's really interesting as an artist. Like, I want to just... But I want to make beautiful things.
Yeah.
I want to make things that are, like, meaningful and lasting, you know? But I also don't, like I said, I don't... I wondered, like, with the thing I gave you, when your son got baptized.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at those. I've done that for a few months, or, you know, like, for about 6 months, you know, the different people have gotten baptized.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of, it comes from a very pure place, and I realize that they're kind of weird. You know, like, so I mean, in some sense, there's still something interesting there, and I wasn't trying at all to be interesting, you know.
Right.
But like, as an artist, sometimes you do try to be like, you want to be like unique because you're competing or whatever.
Right.
But,
yeah.
I was thinking about, like, there was complete purity in those, but yet they still are a little weird, and I'm not sure people know what they're. I'm not sure there's like any connection, you know, like.
Right.
But that shows it had like uniqueness, personality without you even having to try.
Right. Like, so I'm not sure. Like, that's something that's kind of new to me. Because like those, I started doing those. I did one for myself a year. Mm-hmm. I think I might've mentioned I had one on my easel.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw these things as like kind of like crafts. I mean, it's not like painting a portrait. Like, it's not the same thing for me.
Yeah.
Like, I could make things like this, like, you know, it takes effort, but I like, I can make several of them, and I just kind of creatively come up with shapes and stuff, you know? But I think years ago, I would have just dismissed that. Like, I would have had to be more tortured or more like in an existential moment, you know, for it to be unique and stuff. But, you know, I'm just like happy to be a part of your son's baptism, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't wait to like be able to give this and be a part of this. And then in the end, I look back at it and I'm like, well, it's still pretty weird and cool, like, for me. You know, like, I don't know. Like,
no, I, my brain is splitting off like three different directions. There's so much great stuff there. I'm going to rally my thoughts and try and say them concisely. No, I relate. One of Hamlet is not what I think people most remember me for who've seen me in shows. That is, I'm probably the one who remembers Hamlet the most, I think. And if anybody remembers Hamlet, it's probably because of how frequently I've mentioned it on the podcast. But like the audience at Master Arts, which is where I do, where I've done the most shows as an actor, like they mostly probably just recognize me as like, oh, I've seen you in some things. That's probably the most common thing that I get.
Yeah.
And then the one that I've been the most recognized for is the last one I did that was a Christmas musical that was about a fourth magi that doesn't find Jesus. And the script is just kind of a little thin, and it's not as deep as Hamlet. The music's nice, but it was just, it was kind of like it felt to me like one of those like Advent storybooks that you would find just kind of on stage.
Yeah.
So not my most challenging work, felt very much just like, oh, I'm just kind of doing this to do a show because I want to do another show and it'd be nice to sing. And I, at this point, that's, and maybe it's because it's the most recent one, but that seems to be what people are like, oh yeah, I remember you, you had a beard and you were the Magi guy. I was like, oh yeah, yeah, that I was in that one too. But
I remember, I have not forgot you reading scripture at, at Advent.
Thank
I don't know, it was like maybe 2 years ago, or maybe not even that long ago, but like, yeah, like, so it's like, you probably were just like, I'm just reading, but it was like significantly different than anything I had experienced that. So it was amazing. I still don't forget it. So,
thank you.
That's cool.
But it wasn't Hamlet. It's the Bible.
Right. Yeah. But what I think is beautiful about that, about the icon that you made and our unique parts of ourselves still being able to come out, is that's just kind of play. Like we're just kind of playing around. And that makes me think of what you're talking about with the liturgy too, of like, I just kind of receive it and let it just wash over me and have some effect and just see what it's going to do. I think that is, and that's something I've been in kind of an artistic lull and looking at trying to get back into things. And what do I need is on my artistic side or something. And I think one of those most important things to sort of anchor us is just that idea of coming to God as a child, like with our like picture that we drew to put up on the fridge, you know?
Right.
But that still can be so great and so beautiful. And I think that you probably can play and be just as childlike, you know, doing a portrait that could go in the Met, and doing the icon, and, you know, playing Hamlet and playing a fan fiction Magi from the Bible. You know, I think it's harder because when we, you know, when you get to a certain level, you're like, okay, now it's time to really bear down and make this happen. But I think if we can find that seed, which I'm not good at finding, I'm very self-serious, but if we can find that seed of just childlike joy and play. There's a short story that Tolkien wrote that I talked about on the podcast a little bit that I shared with Nate, called Leaf by Niggle. And there's like this pivotal moment where this artist has gotten to heaven and sees a work he was never able to complete on earth, and it's complete and like alive, and he's just like, oh, it's a gift. That's his response. And I just love that, the idea of that posture for us as artists, to just be like, oh, it's a gift, and I just get to enjoy that gift. And it's really hard to stay in that pocket, to stay in that balance point.
But I was do have something that remind me, like, I used to have this thought that like I needed to become less aware. And I didn't know if, like, once you become aware, that you could become unaware. Like, so the idea of play, like, which I think I'm experiencing a little bit, like, of, like, becoming more foolish or, like, a child play or whatever. But today, and again, I don't mean to be too personal in this, but, like, I was in the studio, and I have a big, beautiful studio. It's an amazing setting. And, I don't get to paint that much. I do, you know, I've been like kind of piddling on things. And today I started a painting that I've been having some ideas, and I finally started a painting, and I was fine, but I was in the flow. I was dancing and like, you know, I got this jazz. I'm really into jazz right now. The jazz is in the background. I'm just like loving it. And it just overwhelmed me. I just started weeping, like, which I was not in an emotional state. But I think there was part of me that just had recognized, like, the child. That's what you're making me think of. Like, I just felt that moment of, like, oh. And I had this thought, like, well, I guess this is enough, too. Like, if this is the last time I get this, like, it's enough. And I think that's probably a good place to be. I hope I can hold on to that. But, you know, for now, going on like 2 years, I haven't been able to be as productive as I used to be. And I'm not, you know, what my identity, I'm not sure like who I am now, if I'm not making a painting every week, or if I'm not like getting big commissions or whatever. And so I think I really wrestled with like the loss of that. But then, it was interesting today to like sort of have this moment of play, and then also be like, well, this if this is the only moment I have, like, it's good enough. Yeah. Like, I'll take it, and like, and I don't have to do it again, which seems like a healthy place to be. But like I said, I also know that if I get into making a bunch of paintings, I'm probably going to get right back into like, gotta make more. This is so awesome, you know? You know, but I don't know. I hope I can stay in that. I hope I can be aware of like that play and not be so in that weird meta position where you're like watching yourself all the time and just judging yourself and like just like and just enjoying whatever. And if it sucks, it sucks, you know. And if nobody else, who cares? Like it really doesn't make a difference at this point. And it helps having a kid.
Yes,
it was hard, but like. It has eventually, it's got to me where I'm just like, well, in the end, like he's the project, you know, he's the art, and like, I don't, you know, I don't need to worry about this stuff as much as I did, you know, but I was later when I had a kid too. I was 40.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of people do that, but I was 40, but I do think that made it a little harder because like, you know, I was full on expecting to just be an artist the rest of my life.
Right.
And just like. Be selfish and self-centered and just do my own thing. And then Linus came around and it was like a pretty big shock to the system. And but yeah, in the end, I think it's like saved me a little too, you know, from like my own destructive patterns. So
some of what we were talking about of like the idea of like play and such made me think of a story my wife told me recently. She works at a dance studio and she saw this experience where there's this kid who was dancing and was very self-serious about his role. He's an intellectual, wants to do it right. And he had to be told by his acting instructor, okay, you've done all the work. You've done all the work already in your prep leading up to this. Now you can just go. So just that releasing, trusting that you've done what you need to be the dancer. Now to actually be good at it, you have to let go and just do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes
it. Well, and it like also like pushes you to believe that God is in charge. Yeah. You know, like it makes you realize like, and to be all right with that. Like if I don't make anything great, whatever that means, you know, and like, I just like, then like that's what God wanted for me and I need to be all right with that, you know, like I need to be all right. So I think that allows you to play, right? Like if you can come to terms with like whatever happens, this is what God wants for me. And I can let it be whatever it is. You know, I don't know. I think it does. I'm just thinking of sitting in front of a painting and trying to make something and just being like, well, I guess this is as much talent as I have, you know, like whatever, I just did the best I could and like whatever comes of it. It does feel like that's where I, you know, you can meet God and what he wants for you and just be all right with it, you know. But for years, I just did not accept that at all. Like, I just assumed like I was mentioning before, I just assumed God was like this sort of being in the sky that could give a crap about what I was doing, you know, to be honest. Like, I never thought it was, like, personal. So it just felt like I was, I don't know, I felt like, I don't know, I felt like I was my own standard. I mean, I was, like, my own standard, and I was going to, like, and then I was going to be the judge at every moment, and there just was no play in that at all. There's no peace, you know, like we had said. So, yeah, it does feel a little bit like, if you can just trust that God will take care of things.
And then also, is there a way that we can bring God into it with us? And I don't mean that necessarily like, okay, we have to make it be super religious or something in what we make, but like, God, I want to do this with you. Will you be with me in this process? And I want to have the joy of you in this, because that's really, what other purpose is there than us having the joy of the Lord, experience his joy with him and knowing that the joy comes from him.
Yeah.
Where else is purpose? Yeah.
I think, I don't know, I mentioned this too. I think relationship, I've been saying like relationship is like the, like I know Christ through suffering, I think now, like, I don't know if I should say I know, but I have this experience where I feel like I understand, and I'm happy to be a part of the family, and I came about it through like suffering, and my own like mortality, you know. But I've been saying that, like, I see Jesus through other people. Like, I don't necessarily see Jesus, like, I don't think Jesus is, like, telling me what the pain or anything. You know, if that makes sense. Like, but I definitely feel like there's all kinds of people that pop up in my life. And I'm like, well, this person needs something, or this person needs something, or whatever. And I'm wondering how that plays out with, like, art, too. You know, I've been thinking about maybe teaching. Or, like, you know, like, those little Holy Spirit things, you know, like,
and as much as you gave this person clothing or bread, you gave it to me.
I kind of feel like that's, like, my path in. I'm not entirely sure what that looks like in the future, but I'm hopeful that that, because I don't think I know what it means to, like, sit down and make work. There's been a few moments where, like, I pray, but it's never like, hey, help me to make a masterpiece, or like, show me what to paint. I've thought about the idea of, like, just letting it, you know, like, hey, give me an idea here or something, you know, but I've never done that. You know?
I'll tell you, I've done that a lot.
Does it work?
It works every time.
Really?
Every time. I don't, as I talked about, like, bringing God into it, I feel like I'm not usually thinking about being with God in the midst of the making of it. But if I am stuck of, like, okay, I have this project, how should it, how, what should it look like? And I'm stuck and I, like, oh, I should do what works every time, though I don't do it every time. And I'll just pray, like, God, help, show me what I should do and stuff. And it's, like, almost instantly or within a minute or so.
Yeah.
I get an idea and then it's just
go.
Yeah.
And it's really nice. It's like, it just feels like very communicative, like a consistent miracle almost.
That is interesting. It kind of makes me think too, like, something I still think I don't understand is, like, God's love for me. Which I feel like,
with that too.
Like, I think if you pray though and you expect something back, it's because you at least have some imagination that he cares more. I still struggle with that. I don't know if struggle is the right word. It's just not.
It's hard to fathom.
It's hard for me to believe.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, it feels like it's part of my nature. If you think about, like, a competitive person who, like, is his own worst enemy, kind of hyper self-critical. I don't know that.
And you put that on God.
I kind of feel like that's what I put on God, and I don't even blame him for that. You know, I kind of enjoy it. I kind of like, well, I suck. I'm going to try better, and if anybody's going to do it, I'm going to figure it out. That's kind of how I see the world. I don't think it's right. I just think, like, some of these things, it's part of why I just let the liturgy wash over me, because, like, there's certain paradigm-level things that I don't know how to see the world in a proper way. You know, it's like it's inherently unhealthy. You know, like, to see God, like, as, like, a critic. But it's kind of the only way I know authority. And I love that about authority. I love that whole thing.
Sure, so, standard,
So I sort of just have to be like, okay, I'm going to put on my fool outfit and, like, just let it be, you know. Like,
wow.
And I think maybe, like, that's what I need to do with art more, too, which I think I'm doing. But, I don't know. I would love to feel like God loved me. I mean, there's moments intellectually. I understand,
No, that I put on the fool thing makes me think. I was listening today to a video about Pascal's wager, which for any audience that doesn't know, Pascal was a brilliant guy in many areas, but then he became just really devoted to Christ and, like, theology and stuff. And his Pascal's wager is, like, if you're struggling, if you should or shouldn't believe in God, well, why don't you wager that you should? Because if you're right, you get everything. And if you're wrong, you lose nothing.
Right.
And that made me think of that with the love thing. Why don't we just bet, put on our fool, bet that God really loves me. And if we're right, it's going to become more true because we're living into that belief. And if we're wrong, well, we didn't lose anything because we just are imagining that God loves us, and that's nice.
Right.
that's kind of what I do. But I also think, I don't know if you guys have had this experience, but like the suffering that I was talking about, mm-hmm. where like, I feel like that was a blessing. Like, yeah. I didn't understand the language of like suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure I understand the language of love either. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like you have to wait. I keep thinking about how like, yeah, it's a little bit at a time, you know? And mm-hmm. I didn't even realize that before. I felt like, you know, I knew as much as I needed to know. Yeah. And like, you know, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait, there's this whole other thing in the world. And then you realize there's probably thousands of other things mm-hmm. that you don't understand people or you don't understand God. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I do feel like, and I don't know what to do with this either, like what's my responsibility at this point? Mm-hmm. Because I do kind of feel like, well, He figured out a way to show me suffering, but he figured out a way to show me love too. And there's part of me that does find peace in that. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's peace in like with the love conversation. I recognize, and I've had many conversations with people where I'm like, I probably have an issue with this. It's not very theologically sound with the way I see God, you know. Mm-hmm. But I also think like, I'm doing the best I can, mm-hmm. and like, when it's time, he'll slap me down, you know?
Right.
That donkey will start talking, and then, you know, and then I'll like be like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, I think that place of faith is a great place to start, because that's like opening control from ourselves, opening our hands, and trusting that God's a real person who does real things.
Yeah.
Is something that I've been learning, so that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the time has absolutely flown by. That's basically...
Did we talk about art?
No, this was a really great conversation. We'll have to have you back because we didn't ask any of our questions, but I'm so happy.
This is great. I love this.
I will ask our final question. Are there any resources you would recommend or things you'd recommend for people who are wanting to explore more about the world of art or deepen their own faith? Are there any resources that have been helpful for you or that you would point people to if they're wanting to learn a little bit more?
Well, my easy answer is art history.
Mm-hmm.
I love art history, and it's always been like my sort of guidebook.
Mm-hmm.
I don't put away the past at all. Mm-hmm. Like, I completely embrace that and try to build on it and try to be secure in my own place within that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if this is a good plug, but I love having people come to the studio.
Yeah.
Like, I love sharing information. I have many artists that will text me.
Mm-hmm.
I've been kind of involved in all realms of the art world and making. And so, if anybody is like interested, come to the studio. There's living space.
Yeah.
I let people stay there.
Tell us more about this. What is this studio? I saw something about it on your website.
We live out in Canonsburg, Michigan, by the ski hill.
Yeah.
And I have a studio. It's on the property. It's a separate building with a separate living space. There's kitchen, living quarters, but it's where I paint, too. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But we have people come and stay, but I've had, last year to do it, I have college students come and stay, and we would do master copies.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I teach traditional techniques is to paint copies, because I feel like there's certain ones that I feel like you get all the techniques in.
Sure.
But I have people stay at the studio now for like just a weekend.
Yeah.
But people come out. I mean, I have, like I said, it's a fully functional working studio.
Yeah.
I have everything there. It's a separate building.
Yeah.
I walk out there every morning, you know.
Mm.
That's what I do.
That's
so awesome. I have a wood shop out there, not in the studio. I have a wood shop and a maker space and all kinds of cool things to share. So
I love
having people come out.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we'll have information about that in the show notes
Rabbit
as well.
Hill.
So everybody,
is that the website?
Down.
Yeah, Rabbit Hill Art Studio.
Okay.
.com.
Very cool.
Go.
Yes. Cool. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I want to have you back on because I want to delve into art history at some point and a little bit more of that stuff. So we'll have you on again. But thank you for coming on and chatting and sharing your story and your heart with us. This is just great.
Awesome.
This is really cool.